Hi, everyone. Welcome to EHS This Week's podcast for the week ending August the 29th. I'm Nicola DeCuna.
And I'm Allison Cranky.
And we're bringing you the latest stories in environmental health and safety. Allison, I think you're going to start off with a story about occupational injuries.
Yeah, so the Bureau of Labor Statistics, also known as BLS, recently released a paper on occupational injuries involving insects in the United States. Using the Census of Fatal Occupational Injuries and Survey of Occupational Injuries and Illness data, they report that an average of 10 workers were fatally injured each year during the period between 2003 and 2010. The state with the highest number of fatal injuries during that period was Texas, with 21 worker deaths attributed to insects on an annual basis. Florida ranked second with 8. Perhaps not surprisingly, it seems that the hotter states are the most likely to have higher insect injury rates and related fatality numbers. However, fatalities are pretty rare, but more than 4,600 lost time cases occurred each year during the period of 2008 to 2010, which is actually quite high. Not surprisingly, July and August are the months with the highest number of lost work days attributable to non-fatal injuries associated with insects. Most of the 83 fatal occupational injuries from 2003 to 2010 were caused by bee stings. Outdoor workers who may come into contact with bees during their workday should wear light-colored, smooth-finished clothing and avoid perfumes, soaps, shampoos, and deodorants. Cologne and perfume are also a bad idea for this reason, and anything banana-scented is particularly a bad idea. Employers are also encouraged to protect their workers from stinging insects by training them on their risk of exposure, insect identification, how to prevent exposure, and what to do if you're stung. The CDC has additional information that can help you protect you or your workforce, which you can check out in the resources section of this podcast. And you can also check out the report from the Bureau of Labor Statistics in the resources section. Nicola, I think you have a story on food safety for us.
Yes, so the global food safety monitoring firm Food Sentry released a new report this month that places the U.S. among the top 10 countries exporting violative food items, which are food items in violation of the inspecting country's regulatory scheme, which could be due to pesticide contamination, pathogens, unsanitary conditions, or other problems. The top 10 sources of violative countries in order of frequency in 2013 were India, China, Mexico, France, U.S., Vietnam, Brazil, Dominican Republic, Turkey, and Spain. Illegal pesticide contamination was the most common food safety violation, making up a third of all incidents. So while food safety violations are nothing new, they've been receiving a lot of attention lately, as we all pay more attention into what's going into the food that we're consuming. So we import from every single one of the countries in the top 10, and in fact, the U.S. is among the most common violators. So clearly, understanding food safety from a global perspective is immensely important.
What are critics saying about this report?
Well, Mike Doyle, a professor of microbiology and the director of the Center for Food Safety, says that the report lacks important context. He stated that the U.S. is the world's leading food exporter overall, but other countries like Brazil might lead in some areas, but in total, the U.S. is number one. He thinks if the report looked at food safety concerns on a per-volume basis, it would have a much better number for comparison. In 2013, the European Union for the first time surpassed the U.S. as the world's leading exporter of agriculture and food products, according to a June report from the European Commission. But this Food Sentry report used data on individual European Union nations rather than as a whole. The report also stated that 23.5% of the violated products were seafood, while 20% were vegetables, and 13.8% were fruit. In upcoming reports, Food Sentry says it will explore the leading food safety violators in greater detail, starting with India, which is a major source of foods for U.S. consumers. So if you wish to see the full report, you can find it in our resources section.
Now, Allison, I think you also have a story in the food industry.
I do. So my story is about injury and citation hazards in the food industry. Yes, I have a story about injury and citation hazards in the food industry. So my safety sign recently released an article about one of the worst causes of serious injury to workers in the food industry. Most of EHS professionals in the U.S. are well aware that the most frequently cited OSHA standard year after year is the fall protection standard. There were 8,241 citations to this standard in OSHA's fiscal 2013 year. And it's true that falls are the leading cause of worker fatalities in the construction industry. However, the food industry has a different set of hazards to worry about. Slippery floors, knives, hot water, heavy containers, and cutting and slicing machines are just the tip of the iceberg. Now, the lockout tagout standard receives only 3,254 citations in OSHA's most recent fiscal year and only just makes it onto OSHA's top 10 violations list at number 8. But for the food industry, it was the most commonly cited standard. In the 2012-2013 2013 fiscal year, the food sector received around $900,000 in total penalties. The food industry consists of animal slaughtering as well as processing and packaging of meat, dairy, fruit, vegetable, grain, seafood, beverages, and bakery products. OSHA's accident investigation database shows that lack of proper lockout tagout procedures resulted in 28 fatalities in the food industry in the last decade, from 2003 to 2013. 227 serious injuries, such as amputations, were also the result of improper lockout tagout procedures during this time period. The injury and illness rate in food manufacturing is 5.4 per 100 workers, while the rate in the overall private industry is 3.4 per 100 workers.
What should food industry employers do to reduce this injury and illness rate?
Well, it's a complex issue, and there are a lot of factors, but making sure that all of your workers have a thorough understanding of the lockout-tagout standard and safe procedures is definitely a good first step. The narrow profit margins and intense competition in the food industry can also encourage an extreme pace in the processing sector. Balancing these two priorities is a challenge that the manufacturing industry as a whole continuously struggles with, but NIOSH has repeatedly advised the food industry not to sacrifice safety in the name of line speed. In the resources section of this podcast, you'll find a link to NIOSH's Workplace Solutions document for using proper lockout and tagout procedures, as well as My Safety Signs original article.
Now switching to the transportation industry, this month the Transportation Safety Board of Canada released a report on the tragic 2013 Lac-Mégantic train derailment. So many factors contributed to the train derailment, including lax safety measures at the company that owned the runaway train. The report shows how the situation developed over time from a weak safety culture, poor training of employees, and tanker cars that didn't offer enough protection. The Transportation Safety Board also pointed the finger at Transport Canada, stating that they didn't audit railways often enough or thoroughly enough to know how those companies were really managing or not managing risk. So while the report can't bring back those who are lost, it can help to build a safer future. So the report explains how a multitude of factors played a role in the tragedy, which killed 47 people.
What are some of the safety risks that led to this terrible accident?
Well, one factor was that about one-third of the derailed tanker cars had large breaches, which quickly released large amounts of highly volatile petroleum crude oil. Brake issues also played a role in the accident. The 7 handbrakes that were applied to secure the train weren't sufficient enough to hold the train without additional braking force. The federal agency is making 2 additional recommendations: that additional physical defenses be set up to prevent runaway trains, and that there be more thorough audits to ensure railways are effectively managing safety. Last January, the TCB called on Ottawa to take urgent action to pull outdated and unsafe rail cars from Canada's tracks, as well as reassess the safety of all potential routes used to transport dangerous goods. In Ottawa, Federal Transport Minister Lisa Rayette reacted to the report and said her department will review it thoroughly. In a news conference, she also said her department is working to develop concrete actions to address the TCB's recommendations. Government and industry have continued to tighten rail regulations since this tragedy. The federal government pledged in April to pull all old rupture-prone tank cars known as DOT-111s off Canada's rails in the next few years. Millions of dollars have been pledged to rebuild Lac-Mégantic. The federal and Quebec governments have said they will split this cost. It'll be great to see some of the rebuilding start. Hopefully this report can provide some closure for the victims and the families affected by this accident.
Absolutely.
Now, Allison, I think you're closing up with an interesting story on school workplace safety.
Yeah, so we've talked about young worker safety on this podcast in the past and how the population of workers under 25 are especially vulnerable to workplace hazards for a number of reasons. One of these reasons is that these workers just don't have as much work experience. One of the reasons is that these workers just don't have as much work experience, and this translates into a lack of knowledge and awareness of workplace safety hazards. Each year in the U.S., more than 200,000 minors under 18 are injured at work. Sadly, every year, 70 of these young workers die. One high school in Oklahoma is certainly doing their part to get that number down. Lotta High School, DECA, has won first place in the Speak Out for Workplace Safety video contest 2 years in a row. And this week, they hosted NIOSH and Senator Susan Paddock to educate students throughout the area between grades 8 and 12 about workplace safety training. Lotta's whole school workplace training was started back in 2008 and has been a great success so far. Schools, whether they are high schools, colleges, or universities, are sometimes criticized for not providing their students with skills that they'll need in the real-world workforce. But this seems like a really awesome initiative that is bringing a real-world workforce issue into the school setting. So hopefully we see more high schools doing the same in the future.
And I think that's it for the week. We hope you enjoyed this week's stories, and we'll talk to you next week.
Have a safe week, everyone.